Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. I'm Konstantinos, your Chorus Call operator. Welcome, and thank you for joining Eurobank Hellenic's conference call to present and discuss the full year 2018 financial results. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Fokion Karavias, CEO. Mr. Karavias, you may proceed.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon, and welcome to the Eurobank full year 2018 results presentation. I will start with an overview. Then our Chief Financial Officer, Haris Kopologiannis, will give you a more detailed presentation. And finally, we will answer your questions. Let me start with the macroeconomic conditions, which are improving. In 2018, GDP growth was 1.9%, as announced earlier today, and is expected higher than 2% for 2019, according to the official projections. This is based on expectations for stronger consumption and investments, while a weaker Eurozone growth environment points to a stabilization year for the tourism revenues and stable exports. Rating agency upgrades pave the way for the sovereign to tap the debt capital markets with a 5-year note a month ago and a 10-year bond 2 days ago, the latter being the first such issuance since 2010. The property market is getting stronger, as evidenced by the first posted year of higher residential properties index and the increased transaction volume, while unemployment, although still high, is declining. In this environment, client sentiment is stronger, deposit gathering is picking up, and low demand, at least from corporates, is improving. Let me now highlight our financial results for the full year 2018. It was a year in which the bank met all its strategic and operational targets, while at the same time we embarked into a holistic transformational plan. More specifically, starting at slide 4, the full year 2018 profitability remained resilient despite the effects of deleverage and the interest expense of the Tier 2 securities. Net profits were higher by 8% year-on-year at 200 million euros, with the core pre-provision income increasing by 1.4% year-on-year. On an annual basis, net interest income was down by 3.3%, but fees and commissions increased by 16.4% and operating expenses were down 1.7%, with Greece actually 3.5% lower. Turning now on assets quality metrics on slide 5, for a second consecutive year, the respective NPE reduction targets were outperformed. I would highlight that the NPE stock was reduced by 3.5 billion euros last year, with the NPE ratio down 550 basis points at 37%, the lowest among global peers. The negative NPE formation accelerated last year, reaching 920 million euros, while Q4 was a new record quarter. On liquidity, page 6. 2018 was a good year as deposits gathering continued at an accelerated pace. More specifically, deposits increased last year by 4.2 and 5.2 billion euros in Greece and at group level respectively, while ELA funding was eliminated. On the other hand, loan disbursements accelerated and loan balances, excluding write-offs and sales, increased by 600 million euros last year. On capital, page 7, pro forma for the merger with Grivalia, our total capital ratio will reach 18.7%, the highest in the Greek market. This level of capital brings us in a comfortable position to execute the NPE acceleration plan as announced last November. For international operations, on page 8, we continue pursuing our strategy to strengthen our franchise in the countries of presence. In this context, the merger with Piraeus Bank Bulgaria is expected to be completed in the first half of 2019. We remain highly profitable across all countries, while profits increased by 12% last year to reach €145 million. Let me now update you on the progress of our transformation plan, which is presented on page 9. Starting from the merger with Vivalia, we are getting all the necessary approvals as planned. EGMs are scheduled for early April, and the new shares should commence trading as of May. On the €2 billion mortgage NP securitization with the codename Pillar, we had a strong market participation in the non-binding bid phase of the process. We are now proceeding in the binding bid offers phase. On the multi-asset securitization with the codename Cairo, we have finalized the portfolio perimeter at €7.5 billion, submitting data files to SSM and applying for significant risk transfer. On our loan servicer transaction, the FPS, we have finalized the business plan, which will be shared with potential investors quite soon. For the last two transactions, we are launching the non-binding offers phase shortly. Overall, we are pleased both with the inbound investor interest and the plan execution, which is on track. Turning now on page 11, based on the new NP reduction targets to be submitted to SSM by the end of the month, Eurobank will have a significantly de-risked balance sheet with NP ratio at 16% at the end of 2019 and 8.8% by the end of 2021. This paves the way for a normalized cost of risk, which should drive strong sustainable earnings per share and 10% return on tangible equity as of 2020. So, with solid performance delivered in 2019 in terms of resilient profitability, asset quality improvement, and deposit gathering, we are focusing on the execution of the transformation plan, and we are working throughout 2019 to deliver it. All the above make me very optimistic about the prospects of Eurobank. At this point, I would like to ask our CFO, Harris Kokologiannis, to present our results in detail before opening the Q&A session.
Thank you, Fokion. Let's now provide some more insights on the fourth quarter results. Moving on slide 16 and the liquidity, as shown in the top left of the page, funding from ELA has been zero during 2019, mainly driven by strong deposit inflows in Greece and the €0.6 billion securitization concluded in December. As regards the capital position on page 17, in the fourth quarter, the fully loaded CET1 ratio's decrease of 40 basis points was the result of higher RWAs, largely due to significant lending growth, but mainly of Greek government bonds' negative mark-to-market, which has been reversed in the first quarter to date. Pro forma, including the impact of merger with Grivalia, fully loaded CET1 ratio amounts to 13.4% and the total capital ratio to 18.7%, almost 500 basis points higher than the overall capital requirement. Moving on page 20 and on loans and deposits. In the last quarter of the year, gross loans, excluding write-offs and FX effect, increased by €520 million, driven by the corporate segment, largely in Greece, but also in Bulgaria. Group deposits increased by €1.5 billion quarter on quarter, out of which €1.3 billion coming from Greece. On page 23, net interest income for the group increased slightly to €353 million as the lower ELA and repos cost and the higher loans margin, mainly due to corporate recoveries, offset the $11 million one-off income of the previous quarter related with arrears interest on tax receivables awarded from the courts. On page 24, net commission income increased in the fourth quarter by 19% to €94 million. This is mainly attributed to the lending and network commissions, while all fee categories showed higher readings. On page 25, operating expenses, despite the fourth quarter seasonality, decreased on a yearly basis by 1.7% for the group and by 3.5% in Greece as a result of lower personnel cost. More specifically, as shown at the bottom of the page, during 2018, the number of employees in Greece decreased by more than 400 at levels below 9,000. Further on pre-provision income and on page 14, on the top left of the page, core PPI increased by approximately 3% on a quarterly basis due to strong fee income, while pre-provision income decreased to $235 million, driven by lower other income. Moving on asset quality and on page 15, as shown on the top left of the page, negative NPE formation amounted this quarter to €400 million, mainly due to the performance of the mortgage and corporate portfolios. NPEs decreased quarter on quarter by €1 billion, driven by the high negative formation, increased liquidations and write-offs. As a result, the NPE ratio receded by 200 basis points to 37%. Provisions in the fourth quarter amounted to €167 million and cost of risk over net loans to 1.9% for the quarter and the full year. Overall, as shown on page 13, the group recorded in the fourth quarter a recurring net profit of €29 million and for the full year, €201 million, higher by 8% versus 2017. This completes my presentation and we may now open the floor for your questions.
First question comes from the line of Floriani Jonas with Axia Ventures. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for the presentation. My first question is on slide 11. I just noticed that I think that you made an adjustment to the organic part of the NP reduction. As far as I remember, you had the 2 plus 7 plus 2 billion. So now I see 1.1. Can you please just confirm if that's the case and the reason for the change? And then my second, I'll just go with the usual comments on guidance for 2019, especially now having in mind the transformation plan. But you know, what has been the initial thinking about NII, especially when you look at the loan margin side of things, and also on the commission and OPEX for 2019 would be great. Also, if there's any comment you can also share on pace of deposits inflows into 2019 expectation, that will also be helpful. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for your question. I will take the first one and then Harris will answer the other two questions. Now, indeed, you are correct on your note that the organic was at 1.1 at page 11, which is lower compared to the initial figure that we had in the September submission. You could appreciate that there is some sort of overlap between what we had as an organic reduction before and the Cairo securitization. And this explains the difference, as well as some further fine-tuning that we have done in our numbers. Overall, we're going to reduce the stock of NPEs during the course of 2019 from 16.7 to 6.6, which corresponds to an NPE ratio at the group level at 16%.
Regarding your second question regarding as regards 2019, Overall, we don't expect any major variations on the core PPI level, specifically NII, fees and commissions, are expected broadly flattish. Group operating expense close to flat as well, while Greece will be again at negative growth pace, close to -3%. So overall, we should expect a flattish core PPI. On that, we should add on, as of the second half of the year, close to 30 million euro PPI related with the Grivalia operations that will be merged in the following months. Regarding cost of risk of the year, we should expect something lower than 2018, so at the area of 1.7%. So net profit, organic net profit should be expected slightly better than 2018. Now, regarding volumes, the quarter started broadly as expected, I would say, with deposits at +500 million euro so far to date, mainly coming from Greece, and loan growth, I would say, flat. So overall, we should expect a deposit growth similar to last year, while we expect a shy, I would say, lending growth at the area of 1%-2% overall for the group, mainly coming from international operations, but also Greece, we expect to be again on the positive territory.
Thank you.
Next question comes from the line of Kiptazoglou Iason with HSBC. Please go ahead.
Hi. A couple of questions from my side. First of all, on capital, given the movement we've seen for sovereign bond yields, is it fair to assume that as of today, you would expect most of the AFS impact to be reversed in Q1? And we'll probably be looking at the Q3 and Q4 AFS impact you have on capital. Second question, I see you've done 500 million of write-offs this quarter. Is that something that we should be expecting in the coming quarters, maybe in light of the upcoming securitizations or based on the plan you have for 2019 for organic reduction in NPEs, or is it something of the past and we should not be expecting any meaningful write-offs going forwards? And then, if I may, a third question as well. Fee performance this quarter was, at least as far as I'm concerned, fantastic. It was way better than any previous quarter. Is that something that you expect to be recurring, or is there some one-off elements to the performance in Q4? Thank you.
So I'll start with the first and the third question, and then I'll pass to Fokion for the second one. Regarding Greek government bonds yield movement, so far we have reversed the negative movement of the fourth quarter of last year, but not of the full 2018. Overall, in 2018, we had almost 250 million euro coming from increase of GDP's yield that cost us close to 65 basis points on our capital, that it is expected to reverse at least to a great extent as the outlook is as we speak. Regarding your third question on fees, the development of fee-related business is one of the group's strategic priorities. I would say in the last year we put into implementation a plan to enhance fee income along all categories and segments through addressing better client needs and optimize pricing where possible, of course. This, together with the improvement of the economic climate, has resulted in a year-on-year increase of commissions by 16%. Following a year with strong increase, I would say that in 2019, our plan envisages a stabilization, a consolidation at the area of approximately 55 basis points over assets. That is a level slightly higher than 300 million in absolute terms. Looking, of course, for further growth opportunities. Now, regarding seasonality, the fourth quarter is traditionally the strongest one, and the first a weak quarter, I would say the weakest one. At any case, the outlook for the first quarter of 2019 is expected to be better than the respective quarter of last year.
Okay, so let me comment on the performance of the fourth quarter in terms of the NPE reduction. As you pointed out on page 27, we show the contribution of all the different drivers, and you would agree with me that actually the contribution of all three of them, NPE net flow, collateral liquidation, and write-offs was quite higher versus the previous quarters. Actually, in terms of the NPE formation, it was a record quarter at 400 million euros. Still on page 27, you could see that the NPE inflows were quite lower than the figure of the third quarter. The fourth quarter was 272 million euros versus 366, and we had also a much better performance in terms of the NPE outflows at 401 million euros versus 326. So the NPE net flow has done quite well. Equally, it was a good quarter in terms of collateral liquidation. And given that in the previous quarters the write-offs were rather small, we decided to add some more in the fourth quarter. Now, whether this is a projection for the next year, the answer is no. We're going to have a balanced reduction of the NPE stock by using all four drivers. Actually, all three drivers, NPE net flow, collateral liquidation, and write-offs. And obviously, sales are going to have a major contribution through the two securitizations.
Very clear. Fantastic.
The next question comes from the line of Bayraktari Angeliki with Autonomous Research. Please go ahead.
Hello, thank you for taking my questions. A few questions on my side. First of all, we have seen some recent developments on the Katseli law, the household insolvency law. Could you give us an indication on, firstly, what is the potential perimeter of protected NPLs that you have today? And then when I look at the NPE plan that you have presented today, could you explain to us the Cairo securitization and the 2 billion securitization, how many of these NPLs that are now under your protected perimeter will include, if any, and how does this perimeter is expected to evolve over time? And the reason why I'm asking this is there any risk that, depending on the changes of the law, you will actually not be able to either restructure these loans, cure them, sell them, etc. And do you see the changes proposed as an impediment to your NPE reduction plan? That's my first question. My second question related to that, formation has been really good in Q4. Could you please give us some color on Q1 to date in terms of formation and liquidations? Because there have been some negative press articles sort of indicating that more borrowers have applied for protection, and this could create a problem in the first quarter of 2019 with liquidations and NPE formation. And thirdly, other European banks, as part of their SREP communication, have said that they have received guidelines by the ECB with regards to calendar provisioning on the stock of NPLs. Could you please give us an indication, have you received the same guidelines? By what date do you have to be at what coverage? And do you expect an impact either on your cost of risk or on your CET1 ratio from that? Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for your questions. Let me start from the new law about residential real estate. And as you may know, the government is still in discussions with institutions about the details of the law, which have not been finalized yet. Provided that the concerns of all stakeholders are taken into account, the new law may be another tool to effectively manage the small mortgage NPLs and may help the banks to address the backlog of the existing Cacelli law. More specifically, in our view, the new law provides incentives to borrowers, and especially those that are already under the Cacelli law, to pursue the out-of-court settlement of the new framework. We believe that banks will proactively contact such borrowers, which may result in a material reduction of the Cacelli law backlog. And as such, it is positive. Furthermore, the combination of three factors. Number one, the state subsidy. Number two, the pre-agreed restructuring solution, which, as you may know, it entails a haircut for loan to values higher than 120%. And third, which may be one of the most important, the fact that the new law explicitly provides for foreclosures in case that the borrower misses three monthly payments of the restructured loan, the combination of these three factors are expected to decrease materially, in our view, the default rate. The impact on banks overall, in our assessment, should be positive. First, because the loan to value higher than 120% provisions already exist to support the respective haircuts. Second, you could appreciate that any decrease in the redefault rate should have a positive impact on the banks. On the other hand, we have the moral hazard issue, which definitely it is serious, but we feel it is manageable. Now, in terms of the perimeter of the new law, according to our estimates for the system, there are about 11 billion euros, 9 billion euros of mortgages and 2 billion euros of small businesses that could be under the perimeter of the law. Out of the 9 billion mortgages, about 50% are already under the Cacelli law. And for Eurobank in particular, the respective figure is 2 billion euros out of the 11. And in terms of the Pillar transaction that you mentioned, about one-third of the loans are either under the Cacelli law or under the new framework. Overall, our assessment about the law is on the positive side, as I said, that it could be another tool for dealing with mortgage NPEs, and more important, dealing with the backlog of the Cacelli law. Now, moving into your second question about the performance of the first quarter in terms of the NPE reduction plan. As I mentioned already, the organic figure for the reduction is, actually the figure for the organic reduction is 1.1 billion euros for 2019. So on average would be something like 250 million euros, which is lower than the respective figures that we had in 2018. The first quarter is going to be a weaker quarter than the fourth quarter, that was anyway a record quarter, but in line with our plan. Now, regarding your question of whether we have seen any sort of deceleration in liquidations or applications for protection, we have not seen anything in particular. However, it is true that the headlines about the new law have made some customers more hesitant to enter into restructuring solutions with the banks. Therefore, we believe the sooner this discussion is concluded and the law is final, the better it is for the banks.
Now, regarding your question about provisioning calendar, in the context of recent discussions with SSM, in the context of SREP dialogue, we were communicated that the starting point for the stock of NPEs regarding the provision calendar will be end of December 2020. For unsecured NPE portfolios with a vintage older than 2 years, the coverage should be at 50% as at the end of 2020 and increasing by 10% per annum to reach 100% by 2025. For secured NPEs with a vintage of older than 7 years as at that date, i.e. the end of 2020, it starts with a coverage of 40% to increase by 10% per annum and reaching 100% by 2026. It should be noted that provisioning calendar will not affect accounting provisions, but will be part of the overall SREP assessment process, which monitors, among other things, the progress achieved in NPE management. Given our NPE acceleration plan and the anticipated reduction of NPEs to a single-digit ratio at the end of 9% in 2021, we don't expect any material impact.
If I may just follow up on that, how many of these 3.5 billion NPEs in 2021 do you expect to have a vintage above 5 years or so?
We are at the at this stage. We are, let's say, fine-tuning our plan in order to be able to submit them to SSM. So we have focused on that, and we'll be able to provide, to do more work and provide more details regarding such an analysis thereafter. However, intuitively, I don't expect to be something higher than 20-30%.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
The next question comes from the line of Solonitsyn Anastasia with UBS. Please go ahead.
Hello, thank you for the presentation. I've got several questions. First of all, on securitizations. So previously you guided a combined like capital impact of a transformational plan of around 1.1 to 1.4 billion. Now I see from your presentation the new range of 1.2 to 1.4 billion. This is only for the securitization of 7 billion, as I understand. And could you please guide us what is the combined capital impact of these two securitization transactions and why we see in your presentation 7.5 billion multi-asset instead of 7 billion, what this additional 500 million come from? And what could you please also provide details on the coverage impact of the securitizations? And I will ask my second question after this. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your question. Let me guide you regarding, first of all, the easy answer, the difference between 7 and 7.5 in the securitization we have included, apart from NPEs, close to 500 million euro performing for bond loans with a high probability to become redefaulted. To redefault within this year. So the 7.5 include 7 billion euro NPEs plus another 500 performing for bond loans. Now, regarding our capital position post the completion of our transformation plan, as we have said, the expected CET1 impact from the 7 billion NPE, the Cairo securitization, should be expected between 1.2 and 1.4 billion, and this will be covered by the capital boost from the merger with Grivalia and the sale of FPS. So by the end of 2019, we should expect a fully loaded CET1 ratio at levels similar to the end of 2018. And furthermore, as of January 1st, 2020, will be strongly capital accretive due to the increased profitability on the back of substantially lower cost of risk coming from the significantly reduced NPE level. So overall, we expect to end 2020 with a fully loaded CET1 ratio higher than 12% and a total capital ratio higher than 16%.
Okay, got it. Thank you. But you indicated this range of 1.2 to 1.4 only for this 7.5 billion multi-asset transaction, or does it also include this 2 billion mortgage securitization?
The pillar, the 2 billion securitization, it is included in the guidance that we have given in the cost of risk, in the annual cost of risk, that it is included in the guidance that I gave before. Of 1.7% on net loans cost of risk for 2019. Within this figure, we have included also the impact from the pillar securitization.
Mm-hmm. So this pillar securitization goes through P&L and another securitization is through capital, right? And, sorry?
No. The pillar securitization will be in full through P&L. Regarding the Cairo securitization, the major part will be through P&L again, and another part that it is the fair value of the part of Cairo that will be distributed as a dividend to shareholders will pass directly through equity.
Okay. Could you please also remind me once again, so you have 1.7 estimate for cost of risk for next year, and how do you see it in 2020?
Sure. In 2020, given that we start the year with a level of NPEs at more or less one-third of the level that we closed 2018, we expect a very material de-escalation of cost of risk at the area of 1%.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
and this will be, let's say, the major driver for the boost of profitability in 2020.
Mm-hmm. Understand, thank you. And the second question is, what is your stance on Bank of Greece plan with a nationwide SPV with DTC usage? Do you see if you can benefit from merging your plan with that framework if it is finalized? So would you rather wait for their decision or you don't consider at all this opportunity and you will proceed with your own initiative on SPVs? Thank you.
Sure. Let me take this question, please. Overall, as I have said a number of times, the more tools we have, the better it is. And to this extent, the discussion about the APS, the Bank of Greece plan, but also the most recent one about the new law for mortgage loans, are all of them on the positive side. Now, with respect to our plan or the APS or the Bank of Greece plan, all of them rely on the securitization. And as such, they are complementary to each other. In particular, the Bank of Greece plan has the innovative feature that addresses at the same time the NPE issue and improves the quality of capital. As such, it would be very positive if it moves forward in a timely manner so that we can consider adopting this plan in our structure for Cairo. With respect to the APS, it is our understanding that this is a more advanced plan, given that it has already been submitted to DG Comp for approval. Once approved, we may also consider it because it could provide some risk-weighted assets relief for our two securitizations. More specifically, in terms of RWA consumption, Pillar is going to be at 500 million euros and Cairo is going to be close to 2 billion euros, so in total 2.5. So if we could have a tool to get the RWA relief, this could correspond to 75 basis points boost in terms of CET1 capital, provided that the economics for the state wrapper would make sense. So we are looking forward to the approval of both plans, both the APS as well as the Bank of Greece plan.
Okay, thank you. So 75 basis points on CET1 if this APS framework comes through, right?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, and one very small question. Could you please clarify, you have around 70 million non-loan impairment in fourth quarter. What was it attributed for? Was it in one-off or should we expect something similar next quarter? Non-loan impairment on P&L.
As we have said, overall we should expect, first of all, fourth quarter didn't include any one-off impact. And as far as 2019 is concerned, as the outlook is for 1.7% cost of risk on net loans.
Yes, I understand on cost of risk and loan impairment, but you also recorded additional provisions, like non-loan impairment in your P&L, if I look for your statement. So,
I got it.
Upper impairment and losses.
Yes, actually this relates to repossessed assets impairments. This for 2019 should be a similar or close to similar amount.
Okay. Also in fourth quarter, right? So we shouldn't expect nothing like in third quarter this year. Right?
This is correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much.
The next question comes from the line of Adurno Cristobal with Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much for the presentation. Just a couple of very quick questions on my end. So the first one is regarding the corporate transformation. So I just wanted you, if you could confirm whether the downhiving of the DTCs will require any sort of approvals. And then my second question is just if you could give us some guidance regarding the evolution of cash coverage in 2019 and 2020. Thank you very much.
Sure. Regarding DTC, actually we're expecting a law legislating the universal succession for the envisaged corporate transformation that we plan to execute. This law was voted 1 week, 10 days ago, so this actually paves the way to proceed. For confirmatory reasons, we are going to ask for a ruling. Actually, we have applied for to Inner Revenue to provide a ruling for that. But apart from it, no other legislative initiative is expected. Regarding the coverage I would say throughout the horizon of our transformation plan, we don't expect at any point the coverage to drop below 50%. The same applies as well, of course, for 2019, end of 2019.
Thank you very much. No further questions.
Next question comes from the line of Galvin Daisy with Tokyo Marine. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi. Thank you for your presentation. I just wanted to know more about the Cairo securitization and whether that will be serviced by the financial planning services and whether these tranches of securitization will be guaranteed by the government. And also who the main investors will be of this securitization. Thank you.
I'm not quite sure about your question. I mean, you ask whether there is any sort of guarantee from the government.
Yes, in terms of any default in any payments.
Okay. The both securitizations that we are doing, the 2 billion and the 7.5 billion, do not rely on any sort of external support or government support. The securitization will proceed only based on the internal cash flows. As we have explained in previous communications, the senior tranche will be kept 100% by the bank. The mezzanine tranche in Pillar is going to be sold to the market, and the mezzanine tranche in Cairo is going to be sold to the market at a percentage of about 20%, and the rest will be distributed to the shareholders of Eurobank. So I confirm that in order to proceed with these transactions, we require no external support, including no government support. Now, if the APS is approved in the meantime or after the launching of the securitizations, we're going to review the economics of the APS, and if they make sense, we may attach a state wrapper on the senior tranches that we're going to retain, and this may result in a capital relief for the bank, as I mentioned before. But this is not a must for the transaction to proceed.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Kepaptsoglou Yasson with HSBC. Please go ahead.
Hi, a couple of follow-up questions from me. If we think about SREP requirements going forwards and the potential interplay between this provisioning calendar by the ECB and the potential reduction in Pillar 2 requirements as your NP book comes down, would it be fair to assume that the overall requirement is not going to change much going forward? Is that how you would be viewing it for the next couple of years? And then a second question on the items below the line. In 2018, we had about just over 100 million from discontinued operations and restructuring costs and et cetera. How do you expect the line to move forward? When should we expect it to go to zero?
Regarding the capital requirements, first of all, we have a further phase-in of 25 basis points as of next year with, that relates with the other OS II. On the back of our transformation plan execution and successful implementation, of course, we have to sit again with SSM in order to re-approximate the SREP requirements, but it is very early to provide any specific guidance on that. Now, regarding one-offs overall for 2018, on a pre-tax level, we had 133 million euro relating with voluntary exit scheme and restructuring cost by 62 million euro, while another 76 million that related with the disinvestment of Romania, out of which 76, it was 35 million recyclement to P&L from equity. And we had a small positive 5 million coming from our shareholder agreement on the back of sale of insurance. Now, regarding 2019, we expect to have a pre-tax impact of close to 45 million restructuring costs, mainly related with a voluntary exit scheme. Another 5 million from completion of Romania transaction, plus some additional costs related with the implementation of our transformation plan.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Bayraktari Agelegi with Autonomous Research. Please go ahead.
Hello, thank you for taking my follow-up questions. Two questions, please. First of all, is there any possibility that the ECB could allow you to increase your Greek government bond exposure? And would you, if that is a possibility for you, would you consider it in order to boost your NII? And the second question on TLTRO, could you remind me, please, how much of your ECB exposure is currently TLTRO 2? And given today's announcements, do you expect to participate in the upcoming TLTRO 3, let's call it this way, and do you see any benefits from that for the P&L? Thank you.
Thank you, Angeliki, for your question. First of all, we have no visibility whether and when ECB is going to fully lift or gradually relax this this cap on GGB investments. If at any point ECB lifts this this cap, as of then, will depend on our internal risk appetite to invest on Greek government bonds. And risk appetite, current risk appetite, allow for some further investments on Greek government bonds. But again, I repeat that we have no visibility whether and when ECB is going to proceed on that. Now, regarding TLTRO 2, we have outstanding 1.25 billion euro of zero-cost funding from ECB. Now, regarding TLTRO 3, as I also read from the ECB's announcement, a new series of quarterly targeted longer-term refinancing operations will be launched, starting in September 2019 and ending in March 2021, each with a maturity of 2 years. So under TLTRO 3, counterparties will be entitled to borrow up to 30% of the stock of eligible loans as of end of February 2019 at a rate indexed to the interest rate on the main refinancing operations over the life of each operation, plus some built-in incentive for credit conditions to remain favorable. So out of this announcement, what is still to be clarified, it is what they define as eligible loans, and second, what are these sort of built-in incentives. So once these are clarified, we'll be in a better position to see how we can get benefit out of that. But of course, it's a very favorable development for a funding for next 2 years.
Thank you. And if I just may follow up on a last question on your fees that was asked previously in Q4. Network fees, they have gone up quite markedly. Could you please explain to us, if there is nothing of non-recurring nature in Q4, what has driven exactly network fees up so high? Is it the volume of activities in Q4, or is it that you have repriced effectively all the transactions that customers do through the network?
Sure. On the network, actually, the major part is coming from platform fees. I wouldn't say that there is something one-off apart from a couple of million. On the lending, on the contrary, we had some syndicated loans and some arrangement fees that for sure create a momentum, but it's not certain that will be repeated in the first quarter of 2019. As I said, it would be better to see on the overall yearly picture where we envisage fees and commissions at an area of 55 basis points over net assets could translate at a level of 300 million or higher. Of course, there is seasonality, and there is quite significant seasonality of fees and commissions. Fourth quarter is traditionally strong, but overall, our plan is for that level of fees for next year. So more consolidation and, let's say, stabilizing this re-rating level.
Thank you.
We have a follow-up question from the line of Solonitsyn Anastasia with UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi again. Thank you for taking my follow-up questions. First of all, I would like to clarify, what are your cost optimization initiatives for 2019? Do you see any room to cut staff costs and administrative costs further? And particularly, what should be the impact from a relief of NPE-related costs like by 2023? Thank you.
Okay, in terms of the operating expenses, we said that for the full year 2019, we expect a flattish situation with Greece remaining in the negative territory. During 2018, we had the reduction of staff of 421 FTEs. This effort is ongoing. Therefore, you should expect a further reduction during the course of 2019, maybe at slightly lower level than 2018. Now, in terms of the cost related with the people involved on the the remedial section on the management of the NPLs, as you know, we are moving forward with the transaction of FPS, and as a result of that, some of the operating costs will transform into fees paid to FPS. The overall effect on the bank is going to be very close to zero.
Okay, thank you, got it. And one more question on auctions activity. Could you please give us some color, how is it developing? I still see that you acquire around 86% of total properties. Given that property prices are rising, how do you see it going forward? Would you expect more third parties participation, and how will you deal with the real estate on your books? Thank you.
As I mentioned in my introductory remarks, it is positive that the real estate market is getting a boost. 2018 was the first year that the respective index for residential real estate was positive. The same was the case for commercial real estate, and we see also an increase in transaction volume. So the more this trend continues, the better it's going to be for third parties to participate in auctions, and as a result, the percentage of properties acquired by the bank to be reduced. Now, given our strategy about the accelerated NPE reduction plan, and given that in 2019 we're going to reduce the outstanding NPEs quite drastically, you could appreciate that 2020 onwards, the amount of properties that we may have to acquire should be quite lower than the levels of 2018 or 2019.
Okay, got it. Thank you very much.
We have a follow-up question from the line of Floriani Jonas with Axia Ventures. Please go ahead.
Hi guys, just a follow-up on your comments on coverage. When you said that you expect coverage in the coming years to not drop below 50%, is this your kind of internal management kind of lever expecting? and how the, you know, how the SSM is looking to it. I mean, how is the, you know, the supervisory approach from their side on overall coverage levels? Do you do you think there is a pressure for that 50% to be kind of a unofficial benchmark?
No, there is no such benchmark. However, 50 is the outcome of the calculations that we have made to see what is the projection of coverage by implementing the current provisioning policy of the bank. We remain north of 50 in all years ahead of us. With respect to the SSM, the feedback that we have received so far from it is that it feels comfortable seeing the coverage level higher than 50%, but there is no, let's say, soft or hard benchmark from the side of the SSM.
Got it. Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Manolopoulos Konstantinos with IBG. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello. Thank you for the presentation. Actually, it's a follow-up on your guidance. With respect to fees and OPEX, you've referred to flattish evolution for 2019. And I was wondering whether this includes the impact of Grivalia, because there should be an elevated boost on your fees coming from the merger. So I guess that this excludes the 300 million guidance over, excludes the impact of Grivalia, right?
As I said, the outlook, the guidance, let's say, concerns Eurobank standalone. Grivalia is adding a PPI on an annual basis of 50 to 60 million euro. So for the half year 2019, it will add the PPI of close to 30 million euro. Of course, this is broken down into income and expenses. So my guidance excludes Grivalia, yes.
Okay. And as far as the APS is concerned, you've referred to 2.5 billion RWA relief, should that happen? I mean, so if you were to use the state guarantee for the APS, you would have a 2.5 billion RWA relief. Is that correct?
This is correct. This is our estimate, our initial estimate, provided that the economics of the APS makes sense for us.
Okay, thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, there are no further questions at this time. I will now turn the conference over to Mr. Karavias for any closing comments. Thank you.
Okay. Let me thank you all for your participation, and let me also thank you for your very interesting questions. Hopefully, we were able to elaborate on our plan. We are looking forward to seeing you in our next roadshows, either in London or in New York, or whenever you visit us in Athens. Thank you for your participation once more.